Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Tickets for the Chicago Wolves 25th anniversary season are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Be there for the home opener as the Wolves defend their back-to-back Central Division championships on October 13th at Allstate Arena. Thanks for sitting in yesterday, Hub. How's it going?
Going well. Had a lot of fun with Connor. I was glad it was yesterday and not today. It's a lot easier when the Cubs win big than lose big. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Always.
So what does it mean that the Bears and their fans licking their chops over a road matchup that just looks like it's setting up for them to steamroll a team that sucks?
You know what's so bizarre about this is that we just finished taping the Chicago Football Now show and we do our fantasy starts and sits and whatever. David Johnson was the number one pick in almost every fantasy league out there, and we just told our viewers to sit him this week. Now part of it is how awful Arizona has been and that they're not using him properly, but part of it is that this Bears defense is for real. And normally in this situation, you know, I think Bears fans would be saying, these are the ones they find a way to lose, and Johnson will go off, and Bradford will have a good game. I don't think against bad teams you run that risk with this defense. Now, I don't know what the offense is going to do. I mean, it could be a low-scoring disappointment. But I think what we've learned through 2 weeks is that the entire defense, and specifically this front seven, it has a chance by the end of the year to be one of the better groups we've seen in the league in the last 10, 15 years.
We've got a little news about that defense just coming out. Apparently, Leonard Floyd is going to have a different brace on his hand this week, and he gets his fingers back. So that's a plus. Speaking of Leonard Floyd, I don't know how much of the use of his hand he's going to have yet, but Floyd is, you haven't seen him much in the pass rush, but I think he's played the run fairly well, and I think his coverage has been really good.
He's played the run well. He's dropping into coverage. He's learned the assignments. He knows the position now. He's a third-year veteran. He hasn't been a factor in the pass rush, but you talk to anybody who's ever tried to do it at this level, you can't do it with one hand.
Yeah.
I think I heard Greg Gabriel a couple weeks ago. He was talking about Jason Pierre-Paul that first year after the accident when he was playing with the big club. And what he was doing, and he was able to line up inside, is he was collapsing the pocket, but he couldn't finish. He had like three sacks, and Leonard Floyd is not a guy who's going to collapse the pocket. He gets by on athleticism and speed. And I think what Fangio has done is smart. They're not rushing him all that much. They've got more than enough people to rush with him. He's coming sometimes, but they're dropping him into coverages. And you're right, he's played the run very well. And that's why, when I say something is out there as this could be a special defense, not just a good defense, it's because you're going to add that piece to the puzzle because the guy does have double-digit sack potential. And so they are probably going to get better before they get – I just heard Mark saying everybody practiced today. When was the last time the Bears had everybody practice getting ready for week three? So right now everything's working. Now there's going to be some injuries. It's going to happen. But there even appears to be some depth.
One thing about football is it is a game, especially on defense. You can try harder and be better. It's not baseball in that regard. You can just do more than somebody else. I watched a lot of Khalil Mack and just Khalil Mack. He never stops. As talented as he is, it's also the motor. And I'm wondering, when you get back to the defensive huddle, other players on that defense see it and feel the relentlessness of that. Relentlessness. It never stops going. He is working his way to the ball like some kind of machine. And is that something Leonard Floyd goes, oh, yeah, I can do that.
Yep.
I can do that at least. I mean, they see it every practice. They see it every game. I mean, it has to have an effect.
Matt Nagy said it Tuesday, and people just wanted to poo-poo it and say, oh, he's the head coach. He's got to say that. But it's absolutely true. He said that Khalil Mack raises the level of play of everybody on the team on both sides of the football. Because even on offense, I mean, if you're blocking, whatever it may be, when you see the way he attacks the game and the results. I mean, it's not just a lot of guys try hard, but when you see a guy who tries hard and he gets the results, that's what motivates other players with talent who realize that maybe that's the missing piece.
Did you see the Bruce Irvin video?
No.
From the Cleveland? Oh, boy.
It is egregious.
I forgot who they were playing, their most recent game, and this is the guy who was inheriting the top pass rush.
They played Denver.
Denver. Yeah. And this was put on Twitter, and it is an isolation on Bruce Irvin during the two-minute drill, giving you the opposite of a Khalil Mack effort, giving you like the Marcus Peters tackling videos that we saw. But this is an edge rusher stopping. Mm-hmm. Just kind of leans into his guy, doesn't really run back down the field, and it's really damning. It's really egregious.
Well, I don't know if you guys remember the scouting report on Irvin coming out of school. I want to say it was Virginia Tech. I could be off on that. But basically, he's a moron. And I mean, you know, the guy has got all kinds of character questions. Probably a better athlete than Khalil Mack. I mean, that's how special he is, or at least was coming out of school. And that's why you can talk about the brute force of the game all you want. The mental aspect is absolutely huge. And with Mack, what's fun is you go back to him coming out of high school, didn't get any major offers, had to go to Buffalo. He has been trying to get even with people and prove to people ever since high school. And now he's realized that that's worth $140 million, so he's not likely to stop.
Is the expectation – we talked a lot about the cornerbacks, the secondary in their play – is the expectation or the assumption, Hub, that over a certain sample size with the pass rush the Bears have been able to generate, that the interception will come, assuming you don't drop them like Kyle Fuller did? Is it just a matter of playing more football now to get turnovers that specific way?
Yeah, they're going to get more. I mean, you got to remember, Aaron Rodgers doesn't throw interceptions. And even Russell Wilson, last year I want to say it was 34 touchdowns and 8 picks or something like that, and yet you got a bad one off of him. Now, you know, you get a Sam Bradford, or maybe the Josh Rosen experience starts this week. There could be a few. I think what people need to realize, I was talking to John Clayton. He was on the sidelines for the Seattle radio broadcast, and he came over to me after the touchdown to Lockett, and he raised his eyebrows, and he said, $14 million? You know, really raised about Kyle Fuller. And I said, John, you've been watching the rest of the game? Guys, Kyle Fuller is playing really well. He has failed to get his head around on two balls. And that's not okay. You know, the drop is not okay.
But the coverage is there.
Exactly. If you watch his first two games, he is really good in coverage. And as a matter of fact, the reason Russell Wilson was going at Prince Amukamara is because he was staying away from Kyle Fuller. And Amukamara knew it, and they set him up for that. I think Eddie Jackson has a chance to be a Pro Bowl safety. Adrian Amos is playing fine. You know, I mean, he's never going to be Eddie Jackson. I've been hard on the kid the first couple of years. He's improved. He's not a weak point. He's not somewhere where you can attack. And again, there is some depth. I mean, Bryce Callahan is as solid a nickel as you're going to find. They love this kid, Kevin Tolliver. Look at who he's dressing ahead of. I mean, he's dressing a lot of that special teams. And I know the Marcus Cooper story, but when you've got a veteran with that kind of size who can line up outside, and again, you're just talking depth. You're talking about a third, or basically a fourth cornerback. You know, even the secondary is okay.
I was surprised when the Bears got rid of nose tackle John Jenkins, a veteran guy who has played well and knows the responsibilities of that nose position. But there was Bilal Nichols early in the game, and I thought, oh, Goldman's hurt. But no, they wanted to play Bilal Nichols at 6'4", 290, the rookie out of wherever, and they must like him.
Oh, they love him. I mean, Delaware, I believe it is.
Delaware.
And, of course, the head coach is from Delaware, but that's not the reason.
I don't think he's playing blue hen
favorites. No. They do like Bilal Nichols. Bilal Nichols is one of these, I guess they don't call it Division II or Division III anymore, but I mean, an FBS or FCS.
FCS.
I can never even keep my initials straight. But, yeah, he's an FCS player who went to the Senior Bowl and during practices dominated some of the power conference guys. And so that opened a lot of eyes. You know, you take him in the fifth round is probably where he fit. They like him a lot, but that's not the whole story. Up until this year, Eddie Goldman pretty much had to be in a rotation, and that's where a John Jenkins fits. But Vic Fangio talked about this the other day. Eddie Goldman has learned what it takes to be a professional football player. He is in the best shape of his life. He's grown into his body, And he has become an outstanding nose tackle. I mean, you don't see him a lot unless you really study the tape. He's had two great games now. And so as opposed to the rotation, now you just want to spell him. Well, if you're going to develop the rookie, you can do that. But here's the other piece, guys. They're lining Roy Robertson Harris up on the nose. They can line Akeem Hicks up on the nose. And so a guy like Jenkins, who might have been a valuable reserve last year, becomes expendable, and you get that player somewhere. That play, you know who's John Jenkins this year? Marcus Cooper. Because they needed that depth a little bit more there than they needed it on the nose.
So Roquan Smith plays 50-some snaps in his second game. You saw him stack and shed a 315-pound center and make a tackle. You saw him make some pretty decent plays and spread the speed around. What are your expectations for how the defense grows on him? What happens next? Do you think they're going to send him in rushes? Is he more a coverage guy in his rookie season? What do we look for to find that Roquan's got the whole defense now?
Well, I think he's pretty close right now. I also saw him get run over in the first quarter and then miss a tackle in the second quarter. And I think that was if there was a concern coming out, he is undersized. There's no way to get around that. But those plays that he missed in the first half, he made in the second half. And that's what you need to see from a rookie, whether it's the eighth overall pick or a fourth round draft choice. And so the answer to your question, Connor, is that they drafted him more for his coverage ability and his athleticism. He got a sack his first play in the NFL. He's going to come once in a while. He was coming late on that. That was because Khalil Mack blew that play up. But I think what you've seen now, Vic, if you go back and look the last couple of years, they almost never blitzed with those inside guys. Well, now he's doing it all the time because that's what's set up. His teams are double and triple teaming Khalil Mack. So I think Trevathan will rush more than Smith. The beauty of those two is I don't know if there's another team in the league that has two four-down inside linebackers. A lot of teams want to have one. They've got two. They don't have to come off the field. Now, again, they're spelling them. Kwiatkowski got snaps Monday night. But my guess is that you're going to see a lot more of Smith in coverage and against the run than you will see him rushing the passer. You're going to see Trevathan get a few more chances to do what he did Monday night.
Why did the Bears struggle to block the run?
Well, part of it is that Seattle stacked 8-9 in the box a good part of the night. They gave up 146 yards against Denver the week before they came in. They said, "We're not going to get beat with the run." Now there's a follow on to that, which I don't want to pick on anybody. I will not get into grading Mitch Trubisky until midseason at least. But they also do that when they say, "We don't think the quarterback can beat us." And so they were wrong. But it's not like he lit them up. But the biggest problem with the run was how many people they were trying to block. Beyond that, I think Eric Kush is a placeholder at this point. I think Cody Whitehair is playing better than he did last year, but still not back to where he was as a rookie. And Jordan Howard, and I love Jordan Howard, and I think you need to see him more, but he does occasionally pick the wrong hole, and Matt Nagy has alluded to that. So it's a combination of all those things, I think.
Curious at all as to Trey Burton having 10 catches for 35 yards and one touchdown. That was, really, that's a run play. If you look at the way, that little inside shovel thing, that's kind of a run in Nagy's offense. We saw so much of him in the preseason. We saw him targeted so often. Kind of hasn't been, at least in terms of what I kind of thought he would be in this offense.
So you said 10 catches. Trey Burton?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, five catches. I was looking at targets. Okay. 10 targets, yes. 5 catches. Yeah, my mistake.
Well, but that's part of the answer to your question. 10 targets, 5 catches. It's not working yet. I'm guessing, Robinson, I think, had 14 targets. So to me, what's a little disturbing is that with all those receivers, you've got 24 targets going to two guys. Now, I think Allen Robinson showed that he's a legitimate Pro Bowl type player now that he's healthy again. Hopefully, you hit a couple big plays, although he should have two that were missed. And as far as Trey Burton, they're working on it. They're not getting him the ball where they want to, but they're not ignoring him, obviously, if he has 10 targets.
You had a conversation with Danny Parkins right after the game, and he, having lived through the Andy Reid, Matt Nagy, Kansas City offense, he was sort of making fun of me decrying it as collegiate. And he says, get used to it. He said, this is what it is with the jet sweep action and with the quarterback runs that are planned. He said, this is how it looks. So he literally, and he wasn't sort of blithely saying that. He literally said, look, get used to it. Well, this is what you have here. I'm not quite used to it yet. I didn't like the percentage of quarterback runs flat out. I think that position's too important. I see guys get hurt, and I guess I'm going to see more than I want.
Well, hopefully not, because that's part of the maturation process of Mitch Trubisky. But I think, when we call it collegiate, you got to stop that, because it's not only here. Kansas City is the defending AFC West champ. The defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles are running the same offense. You're going to see more of it starting up in Minnesota now that John DeFilippo is up there. And, you know, there's a lot of West Coast elements in the passing game, too. It's just these RPOs that kind of throw everything out of kilter. And what worries me a little bit is you've got four carries for Taylor Gabriel and three for Tariq Cohen. So that's seven RPOs with these little scat backs that is taking the ball out of your Pro Bowl running back's hands. And I think they got to find a better balance for Jordan Howard. I think Matt pretty much admitted that Tuesday in the questioning. But, you know, as Trubisky gets more comfortable in being able to make some throws down the field, you're going to see him keeping the ball less. But I don't think you can argue it at this point. It's subconscious, but he is running too much. He's pulling his eyes down too soon. He's coming out of the pocket too soon. Not unusual with a young quarterback. And I guess, you know, you do have to add to it, he's pretty good at it. And
I don't want him to fall in love with
him. Well, you don't want him to get hurt, you know, and that's obvious. And again, a lot of the answers to this offense finally getting in rhythm is for him to do less of it. I maintain Allen Robinson. I just happened to be right at that point in the sideline. That pick, the first pick from Shaquille Griffin, was right in front of me. Allen Robinson had a full step and maybe a step and a half. If he doesn't underthrow that ball, that could have been the play that started the rest of the season. That's the play they were looking for, and he underthrew the ball. And I don't think he's going to do a lot of that.
Allen Robinson also on that play did not do him any favors.
Well,
he kind of stopped.
He
could have come in. I'm not saying he's got to rip the ball out of the
short,
air.
Though.
It was, but he quit. He could have come back and at least made it a more difficult play for the defensive back.
You could be right, but the other thing you got to add, guys, this kid Griffin, he's good.
Oh yeah, everywhere.
The way he high pointed that football, though, I mean, you talk about receivers doing that, but I mean, he absolutely got that at the one place where, you know, maybe Robinson could have tried harder, but he wasn't going to break it up because the kid made a phenomenal play.
This segment is brought to you by Art of Pizza on State Street. Art of Pizza is celebrating their first anniversary. Stop in for up to 18 varieties of thin, pan, or deep dish. Which is the one I like?
The deep dish. Yeah,
yeah, but what was it had a name.
It's the special. It's the sausage and the pepperoni and
mushroom.
The mushroom and the onion.
Oh, so good.
It's fantastic. We ordered it yesterday.
Hot, fresh, ready-to-go pizza slices. Dine-in, carry-out, and delivery available. Art of Pizza, 727 South State Street. We are going to do more NFL talk, Bears talk with Hub Arkish, so don't go anywhere. You got Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Talking football with Hub Arkish. He is in studio on the Bernstein and McKnight show here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Lots of good feelings about the Chicago Bears. I asked this of Matt Miller before we get into some other stuff. I'll ask this advice of you. How do we make sure that we understand that Mitchell Trubisky is the Bears quarterback? He is going to be the Bears quarterback. He should be the Bears quarterback. That we don't make every game, every pass, every quarter a referendum on everything. And understand that sometimes the game is just these games and view them in tranches, in chunks of performance to see to where he's plateauing.
Well, what I am forcing myself to do is to not analyze and grade him after the game, but to look at the offense. And to look at the production, to look at the yardage, the points, the third down conversions, you know, all the things that he's kind of like the conductor of the orchestra. I mean, he is responsible for a lot of this, but, you know, if the offense is getting better week to week, you're not going to worry as much about some of the passes he missed or some of the things that he didn't do. But there was actually a very troubling sign on Monday night after a NFL standards unacceptable 307 yards of total offense in Green Bay. They actually dropped to 271 Monday night. After averaging a completely unacceptable 4.5 yards per play, they averaged 4.3 yards per play. That's not going to wash if you want to be a contender. So I'm looking at that, and I don't blame Trubisky. I mean, he's partially responsible for it, but this gets back to what you said. Why couldn't they run the ball? Why couldn't they do this? So I think if fans want to feel better about it, and media as well, start focusing on the offense as a unit. Start you know, analyzing Nagy's job as much as Trubisky's, and listen to them. I was getting a little tired of hearing it until I went in there Tuesday for the press conference, but I thought Matt restated his case again very, very well when he said, listen, it isn't week to week and it isn't month to month. This is going to take time. And you know, normally we got so used to John Fox and not getting answers that when you get answers, instead of just feeling good about it, you got to stop and think about what he just said, you know? And obviously he was asked, I think it was the second question Tuesday, well, what about the comparisons you know you're going to get from Patrick Mahomes mm-hmm. to Mr. Trubisky? And his answer was great. He said, you have to understand that Mahomes, even if he wasn't playing, spent an entire year last year in every meeting, every film session, every game planning, on the headset in every game. He only played one, but he had 16 games. Then he had the entire offseason, and now he's playing well, number one. Number two, he's not going to continue to play this well week to week, but he's basically a year ahead of Trubisky in this offense.
He also might be better.
Well, yeah. You know, Dan, the question I would love to ask, but I don't bother because I know I'm not going to get an answer, is because we've heard so much about how much Matt Nagy liked Trubisky and how much the Chiefs liked him. So the question is, had they both been there at number 12 when you traded up, or number 10 when you traded? Because you know what? They did the same thing the Bears did. They passed on Deshaun Watson for Mahomes as opposed to Trubisky. One of these days, I'll find out. It's probably not going to be for 5 or 6 years, but at some point, we're going to find out who they would have taken in Kansas City if they'd had their pick of the two.
All of the well-reasoned ideas on how we evaluate and should we evaluate Mitch Trubisky aside, we do still get to treat this team like a real football team. Where are the opportunities for the Bears offensively against this Cardinals team? It's been terrible, but most of that's been on the offense. There's a couple of names. Patrick Peterson is still there for the Arizona Cardinals. There's a couple of players. Where does Mitch stand to shine?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and there's no mystery. I don't think anybody cares all that much. I'm picking the Bears to win. There's no way I'm going to say they shouldn't or they won't. But this Arizona team, particularly on defense, shouldn't be this bad. I mean, you mentioned Patrick Peterson, who is an all-pro cornerback.
Chandler Jones
is the best pass rusher in the league last year. Marcus Golden on the other side is a double-digit sack guy. Antoine Bethea has been to the Pro Bowl a bunch of times at safety. This is still a very talented defense that just hasn't played well the first 2 weeks. And so the way I think you almost have to attack that is if you don't want Jones and Golden to get off early, you got to punish the middle of that line with Jordan Howard. That's what you do with Jordan Howard. And if they get the running game going the way they did in Kansas City last year with Kareem Hunt, then they get, you know, incrementally better on offense. And then that starts to open up stuff on the pass and make it a little easier on Mitch Trubisky. Defensively, you know, I got to believe that the Josh Rosen era is going to start somewhere during this game, whether it's the second quarter or the fourth quarter.
During this game?
I mean, Bradford's been awful, you know, and that offensive line is awful. Other than Larry Fitzgerald, he doesn't really have any dependable targets. They got this kid, Chase Edmonds, who's the backup running back. But if they can't get David Johnson loose, against the two teams they've already played, the Rams have got some people on defense too, but that group as a unit isn't playing as well as the Bears are, and they only got 6 points off of Washington in their own stadium. So I'd be surprised if they get, well, unless Bradford's, you know, turns it around and has a big game. I don't see them going 60 minutes without Rosen seeing the field.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Tickets for the Chicago Wolves 25th anniversary season are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Be there for the home opener as the Wolves defend their back-to-back Central Division championships on October 13th at Allstate Arena. In how much crisis, if any, really, are the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Oh, I think it's big. I really do. Because the one thing that has, I don't know if it's ever happened in Pittsburgh. It certainly hasn't in the last 40 or 50 years. I mean, people don't realize they've had three coaches since 1969. Think about
that. My entire life.
It's stunning, you know. And Kevin Colbert has been the GM forever now. You know, I mean, he took over, 14, 15 years ago? Maybe it wasn't quite that long ago, but the locker room is fractured. You've got veteran players who are furious with Le'Veon Bell. Nobody, including his own agent, understands what Le'Veon Bell is doing. And now you've got Antonio Brown acting just as badly as Bell, and he's there in the middle of it. You know, Ben Roethlisberger has never been the greatest leader in the world, and the defense is bad. And so Mike Tomlin's been one of the best coaches in the NFL over the last decade, but I've never quite figured out how. You know, what is it that he does that's so special? Well, what he does that's so special is he's always got complete control of the team. He's always got them focused. They don't have, you know, soap operas like this. But this one, I'm not sure how they fix it. And they've been drafting in the first, second, and third round on that defense for the last 3-4 years, and they're not getting any better. And so, you know, it's funny. Who was it? Was it at home? One of my guys picked Cincinnati in that division, and I was like, "Are you nuts?" And I still don't think that it's only, again, it's only week three.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, they're playing the best football. Baltimore probably is the team we should be watching. And because Baltimore is very good on defense, they may be the favorites now over the Steelers in that division.
Aaron Rodgers is saying to Green Bay Press that it's a concern about the knee getting worse as he plays more. You know, the injury he suffered against the Bears. You hear anything on this? Should they be more cautious with Aaron Rodgers when they can be? Is that something you can do with one of the most elite players in the game?
I don't know how you're more cautious if he's on the field, but it's a very real concern. I mean, at this, I think they said it's a grade three sprain, which tells you it's probably, you know, 70-80% torn. And that's what a sprain is. You don't want it 100% torn because then you got to go in there. And I don't think you can do that. I don't know this for sure, but I don't think you can do an MCL arthroscopically. So it becomes a bigger surgery. But you know, pick your poison. I mean, if you go with DeShone Kizer, your season's probably over as far as playoff hopes. I like Kizer. I think he may be a good quarterback sometime, but not close to Aaron Rodgers. And so they've decided they're going to take that risk. But I'll tell you what's not going to happen. It's not going to get better with him playing on it. I don't know how it can. They talk about, you know, getting therapy and treatment all week long. But then you go out there and abuse it the way he does on Sunday, you know, you're going to irritate it. You're going to inflame it. So
do we know it's an MCL? Because initially they said it's bone bruise, right? Initially they said it has to be a knee ligament, and then there was a report it was not ligament related, that it was a bone issue.
I heard it. Now, maybe it was a bad broadcast, but I heard it described several times on Sunday as a grade three MCL sprain.
Okay.
They may be wrong, but that's what they were saying on TV. So.
That's what I'd heard too.
Yeah. Okay. So if that's nailed down, then yeah. And if you got to repair it, you got to repair it. There's no getting around that.
Well, but normally with a grade three, you don't want to do surgery, but that's right. Because you're resting it for 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, right.
You're not out there playing on it. And I'm impressed that Rodgers is being as honest as he said, yep, we know we're taking a chance here, but this is the chance we're going to take.
Also bubbling up today, rumors about Colin Kaepernick and maybe teams interested in employing him. I saw this on TMZ. It was started with a rumor from his attorney, Mark Garagos, and the names that came up were the Raiders and the Patriots potentially wanting to bring him in. Is there anything to that?
You know, Dan, I mean, normally I would say there should be because he's better than half the starting quarterbacks in the NFL, but the impact it has on the lawsuit, and I don't think the teams can talk to each other about the impact it has on a lawsuit, or then it's absolutely collusion.
Right.
You know? So,
right.
I mean, it's a tough one to call. It would be fascinating if it was New England, because if it was New England, it would be for the long haul, saying, you know, when Brady's done, we can get 4 or 5 years out of this guy, because Brian Hoyer's fine as a backup. Now the Raiders, you know, Derek Carr didn't play badly on Sunday. I don't know what that would be about unless Gruden wants to get him in his quarterback camp and all that shtick. The team that I'm stunned by, I guess the Cleveland Browns, there's no point because Baker Mayfield is the future, but Tyrod Taylor is awful. And that team is close to winning some games right now. I mean, it would be good for everybody if Kaepernick got a job. And I realize that I'll set off all the conservatives and everything. Again, I'm not talking about the protests. I'm not talking politics. I'm just saying it would be good for everybody if he got a job, because a lot of those other subjects would not be on the front page anymore, and we could all enjoy football a little bit more.
Wait a second. Are you not Team Browns tonight against the Jets? Are we not expecting him to be in the left-hand column?
I could see the Browns winning that. I mean, who are the Jets? Are the Jets the team that beat the Lions in Detroit 47?
With that defense?
That's the problem with these first 2-3 weeks of the season. You just don't know. I mean, to play as well as they did in Detroit and then to mess the bed last Sunday, until week 4 or week 5, anybody who pretends they know exactly what's going on is misleading themselves. You know, the Rams are going to be very good. We knew that coming in. You know, the Vikings are going to be very good in spite of what happened last Sunday. But other than a handful of teams, we just don't know what you got right now.
Hub, always nice when you can stop in. Thank
all right,
you.
Guys, take care.
That is Hub Arkush, brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. 74% of timeshare contracts are in perpetuity. They will be passed on to your kids. If they don't want it, call Timeshare Exit Team now for a legal and permanent exit. Call 844-915-EXIT or timeshareexitteam.com.
I have the Browns in the left-hand column.
Okay.
Only because I might need that. I don't know. Maybe I just need something this week to kind of just pick things back up.
I've got a follow-up to the developing story in Minneapolis regarding Jimmy Butler and what Tom Thibodeau will do and what he won't do, according to multiple league sources.
There's
and
more?
There is more about what this could mean and what it could portend. That is coming your way next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
So this is the sporting news. Sean Devaney, who is a very, very well-connected and well-respected NBA writer. Jimmy Butler's made it known that he wants out of Minnesota. A story that dates back to our reporting last spring, out of the sporting news, that Butler was unhappy with the work ethic of fifth-year player Andrew Wiggins. There's also some Carl Anthony Towns. And there's
a little bit of that, yeah.
Butler said to have a list of three teams. He sees his long-term options. According to multiple league sources, coach Tom Thibodeau has no intention of letting Butler go for young rebuilding-type pieces. Thibodeau, hotly pursued as a coaching free agent after leaving Chicago in 2015, went to Minnesota because he thought the team would be ready to contend quickly. Butler, acquired last summer in a trade with the Bulls, had become part of that thought process. Thibodeau has zero interest in taking a step back with Minnesota, even, according to sources, if it means he ultimately parts ways with the team.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a wow, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not altogether unexpected, though. Tom Thibodeau is win at all costs, work at high effort, damn everything else that gets in the way of my wins. He's not going to take this rebuilding thing. He's the kind of guy who would cut off his nose to spite his face. I mean, that's exactly what he'd do here.
Devaney quotes one front office executive, unnamed, "No one expects Tom to coach a 25-win or even a 35-win team. Even if he has to agree to dissolve the contract, they would do that before they'd go and trade Butler for draft picks." Says, if Thibodeau sticks with the team, it's expected the Wolves will look to make a deal for a comparable veteran, even if the player is on a pricey contract or in a market that Butler has not listed among his favorites. Says, the Suns and the Nuggets are among opposing executives speculating on Butler's future, expected to be teams making offers. There's the possibility that Thibodeau's not ready to give up on Butler, not with Luol Deng joining his roster, packed with Butler's former Bulls teammates, all coached by Thibodeau. He has the option of holding on to Butler, letting him see how the early season plays out for Wiggins and Towns, and hoping to convince him to stay if those two improve dramatically.
Okay.
Just became a high-risk situation.
It really did. So in the NBA, you got to make the money work, right? Jimmy Butler is... of the, oh, let me find it, the $18 million, something like that. He's got a 1 year left. You'd have to make the money work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no, if you're going to find this veteran, and I'm trying to scroll through a handful of, you know, spot track contracts and stuff, the guys around him, Kawhi Leonard, Kyrie Irving, Clint Capella, Dragic, Oladipo, Wall. I mean, none of those names are LaMarcus Aldridge. If you're going to make any of those numbers work, that's not going to happen. Thibodeau's not going to get his relatively high-priced veteran who's ready to come in there and just take Jimmy Butler's role and then deal with the rest of it.
What does he think?
He's going to end up walking away.
What does he think having Luol Deng there really means? And obviously, Taj Gibson has been a wonderful NBA professional.
Pros pro.
Just as Jim Suhan described him. That's what he's been.
Pros pro.
Incredible overachiever. And they were pretty good last year. And that's the point I was trying to make to when we had Jim on. They could be, if everybody really wanted to play and try as hard as they could, as Thibodeau wants them to, they could be really good. The disconnect we're getting right now is Thibodeau as coach dealing with Thibodeau as executive. And I don't think the two can coexist when everything is about winning the next possession.
I just, you know, looking over the summer here, we saw Tom Thibodeau sign a bunch of former Bulls, right? And we were like, ah, ha, ha, he's trying to, what is this, 2011, right? We made all of our clever jokes. I can't help but wonder if in some sort of, you know, misguided attempt to be sure that he was just looking for guys that knew Jimmy's thing, his act, that whole shtick. They knew what it was and either had lived with it long enough to be able to put up with it or didn't mind it in the first place. Finding guys that he could put around him and just put up with Jimmy's thing. And if you surround it with enough, you know, mass that goes along with Jimmy, then maybe that starts to influence Karl Anthony Towns or Andrew Wiggins and starts to throw the pendulum over that way instead of holding it against. That's never going to work. I'm just saying, what if that's his rationale for signing guys that ain't been good or don't have a leg?
And if you're just joining us, the troll job from Lauri Markkanen of the Bulls today.
Oh, it's real.
That he sent out a picture, a throwback Thursday picture of him on draft night walking out, displaying the Finnish flag on the lining of his jacket, wearing his Timberwolves hat. No other comment, just putting it out there. And it clearly was that's a dry martini of a troll job, isn't it?
Joel Embiid retweeted Markkanen's tweet with just an all caps, bruh. One word.
Really?
B-R-U-H, bruh. I mean, everybody sees what he's doing. That's the best part of this league, is that it's all in front of you the entire time, and no one seems to give a damn that it's out there in the open. They care about perception, and they care about Butler's act, and they care about Tom Thibodeau's, you know, trenchant nature, and they care about everything else that's going on in the reputation game. But they don't care that it all happens in the open.
If you had to buy a stock right now, you can buy Bulls, you can buy Wolves. What are you buying?
I'm buying Bulls.
Okay.
There's no way that this ends. Like, Jim Suhan laid out the best case for the Timberwolves, and it's not happening. I mean, it needs everybody to just put their differences aside and work together for the greater good. That's not happening.
I'm still tempted to go Wolves because they have the best player.
And that is a completely reasonable position.
Yeah, it's absolutely reasonable.
They have a great player who doesn't play defense. But once Jimmy has lit this fuse, something's going to blow up. And what you have to figure out, if you're buying this stock, how, after it all settles, are they closer to winning a championship?
But here's the thing. If Jimmy Butler ends up having to stay, if they can't deal him or don't, or Thibodeau leaves and he stays, that could tick off Towns enough to not resign. You know?
I mean, right. He still has to sign that contract.
The mere perception that we're willing to hold on to Jimmy Butler for any longer could tick a guy off enough to say, well, the hell with this. You didn't do it for me when I needed you to.
I like the name Jameer Perception. I think you should have Jameer Perception.
The
out
mere
there.
Perception. Yeah. I mean, it's
with Delonte West at St. John's.
You run the risk of keeping one and losing both.
He's a restricted free agent, though. They can match. They'll match the max offer.
No, I guess the point is he's got the ability to put them in the tank. You know, money wise, I guess.
Wiggins is already doing that.
That's also true.
Now Jamal Crawford turned down
four and a half.
Four total at age 40 or whatever he is.
Yeah, 38.
He's 38 to come back and be Jamal Crawford. And I believe Jamal Crawford, so he's going to have another new coach, right, to add to his list. And he was drafted by the Bulls after his freshman year at Michigan.
I'm always making lists.
But no, let's let Jamal Crawford make a list here.
You don't want to guess?
Because it's too many. I think he's had, 18 different head coaches in his long NBA career, and he knows every single one of them.
Tim Floyd, Bill Berry, Pete Myers, Bill Cartwright, Scott Skiles. Then we went to, New York, and we had Lenny Wilkins, we had Herb Williams, Isaiah Thomas, Larry Brown, Mike D'Antoni. Then we went to Golden State, we had Don Nelson. Then from there, we went to Atlanta. We had Mike Woodson, Larry Drew, that's 13. Then from there, we went to Portland, Nate McMillan, Caleb Canales, that's 14, 15. Then we went to the Clippers, and we had Vinny Del Negro, 16, Doc Rivers, 17, and Thibodeau in Minnesota, 18.
And now he will move on to 19, wherever he is. Jamal Crawford, that was on the Full 48 podcast with our guy Howard Beck.
That's a lot of coaches. Those names are, there's some names of names in there. Some big names.
And some small names.
Very small, unimportant, and forgettable names.
Very tiny little names.
The one was just an interim. Like the Portland guy after Nate McMillan was
Caleb Canales?
Yeah, I think it was like 20 some odd games.
I didn't remember that.
No, David.
I had to think about who Caleb Canales might have been.
One of the follow-up questions was, how the hell do you remember him?
Well, hey, some guys are like that. If Eric Kratz, as on the McNeil and Parkin show, can remember every minor league team and every Mexican league team that he's played for.
And in order,
in
too.
In order.
You get in late night into a hotel on some road trip, and you're staring up the ceiling because you can't fall asleep, and you run through the names.
Yeah,
you just keep on running through them.
You know what actually I did? So my mind goes places I don't intend it to go, especially when I'm trying to get to sleep. And then it goes from something that you use to try to get to sleep to something that keeps you up.
Oh, always.
Remembering the name of the major broadsheet newspaper in every major metropolitan market. And you start going like, okay, Boston Globe, Miami Herald, Chicago Tribune, New York Times, L.A. Times. Because so many have consolidated. And then I got hung up. I knew like Memphis Commercial Appeal and Sacramento Bee and all of these things.
The New Orleans Times Picayune.
Then
you've got the Journal Sentinel and the Sentinel.
That's
and
right.
Variations of the Sun and the Herald and things that have changed. And I couldn't remember Jacksonville. It just doesn't.
Courier?
No.
They're not the Courier?
Is it a Register?
It's not a Register. Des Moines is the Register.
Des Moines, yeah.
It doesn't pop into your head.
What's the Courier?
So I got up, and I was walking around, and my wife says, are you okay? Is your stomach okay? Because usually if I keep getting up or something, or if I'm turning it, she gets mad if I turn on my phone and stuff like that. So here's the problem. It's Jacksonville's paper doesn't have the word Jacksonville in it.
Hmm.
It's the Florida Times Union.
Oh, yeah. I'd have never gotten
right?
that. Never gotten that.
Right?
No. I think it's not upset they still allow papers in Jacksonville.
And they had the pig-faced man writing for them, too. My guy. The porcine David Lamb with the little stub of a cigar stuck in his mouth.
They actually took a stock Barry Rosner picture.
Oh, no. Not on Barry Rosner's worst day.
No.
Are you
Rosner's
kidding?
Handsome man.
I just saw the cigar.
No. Different kind of thing. David Lamb would pay. He'd give an arm to look like Barry Rosner. I mean, this is just a guy who got.
That's a list.
I did tell
men
you.
Who would give arms yes. to look like
people,
Barry Rosner.
People who would trade a limb to look like Barry Rosner. Yes.
You would imagine that it'd be a lot of people with just the one limb to give, too, is the thing. I mean, it's men who would trade up there. They've probably already lost the limb to begin with.
One-armed men who would give up their good arm to look like Barry Rosner.
They're one-armed, they've only got the one arm.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
You give up the one. Not just like playing with one hand.
No,
right?
No, it's different than that.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Tickets for the Chicago Wolves 25th anniversary season are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Be there for the home opener as the Wolves defend their back-to-back Central Division championships on October 13th at Allstate Arena. Next up, McNeil and Parkins. Transition on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.